A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 148. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of The Invisible Man. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, 1984 BBC adaptation, classic serial from the BBC, a very faithful adaptation of the H.G. Wells novel, produced in 6 30-minute episodes, and with some quite good effects for the 1980s, I think, for television and on the BBC. Some interesting points as we go along in this show.
Yes, absolutely. It's been argued that this is the most faithful adaptation for film and TV that's been done of The Invisible Man. And it certainly has a good cast and all of the hallmarks of a BBC period costume drama from the 1980s in the style that the BBC did very well. So in our last episode, we talked about Griffin, who is the Invisible Man, arriving at this inn in the small village of Epping, and he has the classic Invisible Man look, being all bandaged up, wearing dark glasses and a hat, heavy coat, and so on.
That's right, and of course he provokes a considerable amount of interest from people in the village. We talked previously about how the doctor and the vicar, who represent the sort of educated and informed part of the village, they puzzle about him, and they puzzle about the strange events. I thought we were going to get a little bit more of the doctor and the vicar, and I was quite looking forward to that as a good team up. But as you say, Brian, this is very faithful to the original novel, so it sort of moves past them. And then, of course, we've got the suspicious villagers themselves who start to interfere. They start to break into his room and investigate some of these strange noises and strange deliveries that he's been having. And eventually, of course, we've got to get to the scene where the Invisible Man will appear, or should that be disappear?
Yes, indeed. And he has to go on the run and enlist the help of Thomas Marvel, who's basically a drunken tramp, who, you know, doesn't have a lot of choice when Griffin bullies him into helping him out, and they have to retrieve Griffin's notebooks, because Griffin has his notebooks with his research into what the process he used was to make himself invisible. And he wants to make himself visible again and get some more control over that. And after an encounter with the police, Griffin then finds his old college friend, Samuel Kemp, and seeks refuge with Kemp and confides with him about who he is and what he has done and how he's invisible and so on.
That's right. And that's when we get Griffin telling the story and giving us those flashback sequences, which we've talked about, where Griffin appears before he became invisible, as this strange, rather intense albino scientist working in the labs. And we get to see, of course, the transformation and what happened to him.
Yes, as in the novel, there are some very strange things in here.
So it's a strange novel with a fairly faithful BBC adaptation here. Was supposed to run in their Sunday afternoon classic serial slot, but because it was slightly too violent, it was moved to a Tuesday evening slot. And although it initially got rather good viewing figures, they did tend to tail off in the later episodes. And we know from the production notes booklet that came with the DVD that some of the critics and the viewers were feeling that the pace was rather slow. And of course, the central character himself is rather unsympathetic, which he certainly is, Brian. He's not a likable character, Griffin.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And you can see some of those responses from the critics on the Did You See segment on the DVD, which has some interesting things in it, and you can get a little bit of what people felt was sort of positive and negative at the time. The BBC sold the series abroad quite successfully, and apparently it was extremely popular in Russia, and managed to get up to an audience of something like 64 million viewers, which is quite enormous.
Yeah, fascinating little detail from the notes booklet that's in the DVD. Quite why it was such a hit in Russia, we don't know, but there you go. Fascinating in 1980s trivia.
Yes, absolutely. So the visual effects for a show like this are always going to be important. So let's talk a little bit about those.
Absolutely. We've got any version of the Invisible Man is going to sort of stand or fall on its visual effects, and in particular what we will see, or I suppose not see, of the central character. And as we've talked about, as we've gone along, we've got the key scenes that you have to have. So we have to have objects moving themselves or moved by an invisible hand. We've got to get the final or the dramatic moment when the Invisible Man will unmask and we see what lies beneath the bandages. And, of course, it's quite nice to see the original transformation, which here is shown in the flashback sequences as Griffin explains himself to Kemp. So those key sequences, how are they handled, Brian?
Well, the first two things, the objects moving around being moved by the Invisible Man, and also the Invisible Man unmasking himself and taking off the bandages, they were done by a mixture of CSO or blue screen or chroma key effects, and also with physical effects where they would have things being held up by threads or propped up in weird ways. And they would get the effects of these things moving around without you seeing a person there. And those actually were quite interesting. They were well done. But the big showpiece of this was the initial transformation. And that was done with a combination of model work and makeup and superimposition of different layers of things as Griffin watches himself transform in the mirror. And you see skin become invisible, and then you see muscle, and you see muscle become invisible, and eventually you see bone, and you see the bone disappear. So it's actually quite intense and rather interesting sequence to see that.
Yes, that is a very good section of the show. Not a terribly long sequence, but extremely well done, I thought, and quite unsettling, really, for the 1980s, the way they did it. It's not badly handled at all.
Yes, I was not expecting that, and slightly taken aback to see it and to see it be so dramatic.
And, of course, it is just as Wells described it in the novel, with Griffin seeing himself become invisible layer by layer. So good stuff. The physical effects of moving things around, they're pretty good, I think. We don't see the wires that we saw in the 1950s on television, so it's pretty good.
Yes, it does look quite good.
Okay, so another interesting feature of this show is that it does have quite a good cast, many sort of genre character actors. There's a few cases of sort of British Invaders bingo as we go along. So we've mentioned the last episode, Michael Sheard playing the Vicar. And he has, of course, has had a long association with genre stuff. He's been in Doctor Who several times, I believe, Brian.
That's right.
He was also in Blake 7. We've seen him in other shows we watched, like Beasts and The Tomorrow People. And one of the generals, I think, we saw in The Empire Strikes Back up on the big screen. So lots of stuff from him. But also, as we go along through The Invisible Man, we'll catch brief scenes with some other sort of reliable names and favourites. So the actor Cyril Shapps, who was in Doctor Who, but we've also watched in the Russell T Davies show Dark Season, and apparently he appeared in Out of the Unknown as well. And then if you remember one of the magician's helpers from the series Ace of Wands, Roy Holder, who's also seen in the caves of Androzani, and he turns up as one of the villagers in Ipin, who's very suspicious of Griffin and Griffin's arrival and appearance.
That's right. And then you have Esmond Knight, a blind man. I believe the actor was actually blind at that point. Is that right, Eamon?
That's right, yes, whose sight had been deteriorating over the year, I think from injuries he'd received in World War II, so yes.
Right, and he was in A for Andromeda back in 1961, and he was even in the 1958 series The Invisible Man, so he sort of bridges those two programs.
Yes, he must be the only actor who's been in both British TV Invisible Men, but there you go.
Yes, that's right. And Frederick Treves, who was in Doctor Who and Doomwatch and A for Andromeda and all sorts of things, he was in this as well.
Okay, good stuff. Lots of interesting people as we go along.
What do you know of optical density?
Oh, I know the whole subject's a network of riddles.
I've discovered a general principle on pigments and refraction.
A formula, you mean?
A geometrical expression involving four dimensions.
Go on.
A method by which it would be possible, without changing any other property of matter, except colors in some instances, to lower the refractive index of a substance to that of air.
Or liquid.
Solid or liquid.
Extraordinary.
No doubt you know as much of molecular physics as I do, but let me put the elementary facts to you as if you didn't. It will make my meaning clearer. Any schoolboy knows that if an object neither reflects nor refracts nor absorbs light, then it cannot of itself be visible.
It's plain sailing.
For instance, a transparent thing becomes practically invisible.
So, having discussed the visual effects and the reaction from the critics and some of the character actors, we start to talk about what we liked and didn't like, of the bits we were glad we saw and the bits we were perhaps wished we hadn't seen or couldn't see. Brian, what did you like about this adaptation?
Well, I liked the adaptation of the novel, how it was so very faithful, and I do like the novel, and it's sort of very unusual in structure and in the nature of the main character, and they brought all of that right along into the TV production and approached that with gusto and didn't back off, and I quite like that.
Yes, absolutely. James Andrew Hall, as the writer, does a good job. He sticks to the source material very closely, and the little bits and changes they had to make to accommodate a BBC adaptation don't really jar at all. So yes, very faithful in the long tradition of the BBC, which they like to stick to the source material. And of course, the BBC have also got a tradition of being good with costumes and good with sets. And they're pretty good here as well, I think, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. It does the historical drama quite well, of course. Pip Donaghy's performance as Griffin, the Invisible Man, I thought was great. You know, it was intense and had the unpleasantness of the character of the original novel who spent so much of his time, you know, shouting at people when he's wearing the clothing so he can be seen. And when he's not, he spends his time beating people up and stealing things by hiding them places. And, you know, they brought that sense of this character into it very well. And I really enjoyed that performance.
Yes, he is very good. And as you say, it's a very intense performance and a very striking looking appearance when we see him in flashback before his transformation. So, yeah, good stuff from Pip Donaghy. It's lovely to see Michael Sheard in this. And I think all the cast really are very good. Frank Middlemas as the sort of tramp Thomas Marvel is very good. It's all good stuff from the actors.
Yes, I especially like the character of Kemp, who is the old friend and colleague of Griffin's, who Griffin confides in. He sort of comes into his own in the later episodes, Kemp does. And there's a very good performance in that as well.
Okay, so good stuff there. The effects, I think they're pretty good for 1980s television, Brian, don't you?
Yes, absolutely. They work well enough to get the point across and to do what they need to do. So yeah, I thought they worked very well, actually.
Yep, and certainly much, much better than the 1958 version, where we had visible wires and strings and all sorts of things going on to move objects in the production. But there you go. Anything else about this that really sort of stood out for you, Brian?
Well, I think that's most of it. But all in all, I think it really worked quite well.
Okay. What about the bits that perhaps we didn't like quite so much? Would you have any negatives at all about this show?
Well, I think the biggest mistake of this was having it as a six-part serial. I think having it divided into so many pieces and separated out made it a little bit cumbersome, and it makes it, especially if you're seeing them once a week, as you did in the original broadcast, I think that's a lot of why it seemed slow, was you had these little pieces coming up once a week. I think it would have been more effective as something done even at the same total duration, but in two or three parts rather than six.
Okay, yeah, I mean, maybe that was a bit of a stretch, and it does perhaps slow down the production in various places. Okay, interesting. I'll mention a review, as ever, from Facebook, where Gordon tells us that The Invisible Man had a great period setting, a great cast with an intense performance by Pip Donaghy. It's cozy, an ideal winter warmer with some fun special effects, although it does drag a little in places. So I think pretty much we would agree with that, Brian, as we've been going along.
That's right. All in all, pretty good stuff. Which leads us into our recommendations, I think.
Okay. So, shall I start us off?
Go ahead.
Okay, it's a pretty good production. I have a few problems with it, but at £3 on Amazon at the moment, it's really a bargain, or it's available to rent. So I would say, yes, this is a cautious thumbs up from me. Perhaps not as good as, say, Crooked House, which we've been watching more recently. But yeah, not too bad at all. So I would give this a sort of cautious thumbs up. Brian, what about yourself?
I think it's a good, solid show. It does a really nice adaptation of that novel. And I think it would be my preferred version of The Invisible Man for film and television. So I'll say, yeah, it's recommended. It's good stuff.
Okay. It is certainly the most faithful adaptation you're going to see, I think, of the source material. You couldn't get much more like the novel than this, I think.
Yes, it's actually remarkably faithful to the novel.
But as ever, if you've seen it, if you've watched it as a result of our reviews, or if you remember it from the 1980s, we'd love to know what you thought about it. Please email us, or jump in on the webpage, or join us on Facebook and tell us your opinion of the 1984 Invisible Man.
Yes, absolutely. Please do. So, in summary, The Invisible Man was an adaptation of the H.G. Wells novel, and it told of Griffin, who was a scientist who deliberately made himself turn invisible through these processes involving optical density. And he went into this village, Ipping, as a sort of away hiding place to work on some things, and he shows up completely bandaged, so he can be seen, but of course his actual skin, his actual body can't be, but he's entirely covered. And he is quite an unpleasant person, and makes lots of poor relationships and almost enemies even with the people around him, and eventually has to abandon the place where he is at the inn and goes around with the help of this homeless person and does all sorts of nasty things, attacking people and the like, and ends up going to the to an old friend and colleague of his for help and for refuge, and it moves on from there.
Okay, it's an interesting and faithful adaptation of a very good novel, and lovely bit of work by the BBC, and an absolute bargain on Amazon at the moment. So do check it out and let us know what you thought.
Yes, please let us know.
And of course, join us next time when we're doing one of our occasional spin-off discussions. We're moving slightly away from television to look at one of the spin-offs from a show or a series of shows that we've covered, and then we're looking at the world of comics for, I think, the first time, Brian. and talking about the comics that were based on the Gerry Anderson TV shows, and in particular, of course, the Super Marionation shows that we've covered, such as Thunderbirds and Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons.
Yes, absolutely. The Gerry Anderson shows had a very close tie-in to comics and things with the Century 21 comic book and so on. It was definitely a big deal with those series, so it will be interesting to take one of these occasional side trips that we do once at most twice a year to look at something not quite on TV, but definitely related to a TV series. And this should be a fun one to look at, because there's lots of fun stuff there.
And they were staggeringly successful, as we'll talk about next time. So yes, they were a big deal, these comics. And as ever, if you know anything more about the comics or want to join us, do drop us a line.
Yes, absolutely. So you can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. We are part of the Geek Culture Network, so if you go to TheGeekCultureNetwork.com, you can find us there. And we also have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find us that way too.
Yes, the perfect place to join us and tell us what you thought about our reviews or about The Invisible Man itself. And of course, now you can also find us streaming radio on the internet at the Voice of Geeks streaming radio at vognetwork.com. And as ever, welcome aboard if you've joined us from there.
Yes, indeed. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much indeed, and until next time, this is Eamon in England saying, seeing is believing.